This is Deborah Voorhees. You are listening to Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
Daddy, don't go. Daddy, there are things out there. They'll wait in the mist where you can't see them, and then when you go and can't get back in, they'll come and eat you up. Daddy, don't go.
In a world where zombies, ghosts, serial killers, and vampires all exist, it's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin, and they are all that stand between you and the films that could end the world. Welcome to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast. Just want to thank all of our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's film review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network. So there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. All right, guys, jump into the film review. Tonight, we're going to be reviewing Christina Towers' final girl donor pick. Really appreciate your patience, Christina. You're a great fan. I think this is your second time, too, as well. So we really appreciate your donation. It means a lot to us. She chose 2007's The Mist. This is another one of those movies that's really, really popular for its really heartbreaking ending. And unfortunately, just like The Sixth Sense, I already had the twist spoiled for me. So I did kind of, I won't say ruin the experience for me, but you don't, it's like watching Saw if you already know the ending. It's like, it's not going to hit the same. But I think the movie has an interesting concept, and it would be, this is a movie I think that could be remade, honestly, because there's just a lot of stuff about it that just didn't hit for me, and it has nothing to do with the ending. The ending, honestly, still hit for me because it was gut-wrenching. But, like Frank Darabont, this man done, in a writing or directing capacity, Dream Warriors, The Shawshank Redemption, Green Mile. I was thinking, what happened in this? Like, you know, he did The Walking Dead, for God's sake, which we all really liked in our DGOT The Series review. I don't know, man. Like I was saying, the acting, like Thomas Jane, I've seen him in other movies, and I thought he did a fine job. I don't know, Thomas Jane was just kind of weird in this to me. I do think Marcia Gay Harden, Miss Carmody, I thought she was good in her role. The evangelical end of the world, I thought she did a good job. But the rest of the acting just didn't work for me. It wasn't bad, per se, but it was just kind of kooky and weird, you know? And then, like, the way the movie was edited and shot, I don't know, it kind of reminded me of like The Office or Modern Family, with like how they would like zoom in on a character like in the background while the other person was talking. Like, it just didn't work for me. Like, I wanted to watch a movie, not like a sitcom kind of thing. It just, I don't know, stuff like that just didn't work for me. And I saw on, like, I think it was Jeremy John's review of this movie, like the CGI got better throughout the film, but like in the beginning, like some of the stuff to me just looked bad. Like, even, like, the log or the tree that fell on the boathouse looked really bad. Like, you could tell it was a fake tree. Then, like, some of the tentacle stuff, it just looked weird. Overall, it was a movie that I really, really didn't like at first, Christina. But on my second watch to do my notes, I did appreciate it a little bit more. But I gotta admit, I'm not a big sci-fi fan already. I thought the movie was just okay. Like, I didn't think it was god-awful and hated it, but it wasn't my favorite. I thought it was definitely too long of a runtime as well. 2 hours and 6 minutes. You could have cut a little bit of this out and I'm being generous here with a little, because you could have definitely cut 10, 15, 20 minutes off and accomplished the same things, in my opinion. But I'm going to leave it at that. I appreciate your donation, Christina. It means a lot to us, and I'm sorry I didn't love your pick. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, so here's the thing. So I'm going to call this like a half swerve, because in our chat I'm like, eh, this is going to get low rating for me, whatever. So here's the thing. This is a film that I think has a good story and premise. Like, I legitimately love the story that they're telling here, and it made me interested in the film. So with that being said, there's a lot of other things that I don't like about this movie. All the stuff you said, Nika, the effects look, and I, you know, we'll get to the budget, but for the budget, and, you know, 07's not 1974, like, they had effects budget here. The effects do not hold up. They look really bad throughout most of the film. I won't even go as far as the acting, Nico, because I think there's a really good cast here. Like, a lot of, like, you know, like a lot of good bit actors, you know, that are in a lot of different stuff that I've seen, and they're all kind of shoved in this movie. So I won't go the acting per se, but the dialogue is rough in this movie. And I know it's a Stephen King adaptation, but I believe it was a little bit of a shorter Stephen King story. I could be wrong about that. But all of that being said, I won't say I don't like this movie, because I do. But all the things I said, you know, including the runtime, and let's talk about that for just a second. 2 hours, and it's a little under, but 2 hours. Like, let's be very clear. To me, this movie could be an hour and a half. Easy. There is a lot of dead space, in my opinion. A ton. Well, one thing I do like, and I'll stop here, is one thing it does do, now the dialogue, not great, like I said, but the characters, I think the characters are good, because I can easily root for this group and easily hate that group. And I do like a movie that kind of gives me some investment as far as the characters go. I guess my only complaint would be, these are some really stupid horror movie characters. Like, they make some really dumb decisions overall, in my opinion. A lot of them do. And so that was kind of, man, I hate seeing that, because I try not to be the person that goes, that person wouldn't go in there, knowing damn well I'd probably go in there too. Like, but I mean, there's some really boneheaded choices that these characters make. Overall, though, thank you for this pick, Christina. I'm glad I got to rewatch it, because I actually did like it. I just have a lot of little nitpicks with it, is all.
So I saw this movie back in 2007 when it first came out, and I thought I liked it. I thought I remembered it being good. I thought I remembered the twist being one of those, like, oh shit moments that, like, I liked. In hindsight, none of that was true. I did not like this movie at all. The runtime is absurd. 2 hours and 6 minutes is just way too long for this story. I thought a lot of the acting was horrendous, which is baffling considering the cast. But I don't blame the acting. I blame the writing. Like, the dialogue was so bad.
Exactly.
Yeah, so
exactly.
Bad. Yeah. And yeah. Nico, you mentioned how it felt like, you know, it was edited like an episode of The Office. I said that it was edited like a TV movie. Like, the
it does have a TV movie feel.
Certain scenes faded to black. It's like, okay, commercial break. Like, that's what's supposed to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
I did not enjoy it at all. I appreciate all of our blood donors. And sometimes when we don't like a movie, it turns into some of our better episodes, because we make a lot of jokes and we have a lot of banter. So hopefully that's how this comes across. Not that we're bashing your pick, you know, hopefully you can, Christina, hopefully you can take our opinion that differs from yours and appreciate our perspective, other than giving us the middle finger, because we don't want that.
Yeah, if you want to give Dustin the middle finger, I don't blame you.
Yeah. My, my Twitter is @bhath4, I believe. So send all your hate mail there.
So, hey, really quick, Nico, before you go, I know we're going to talk about the ending at the end, but I do want to point out that this is not the original ending to the book that Stephen King wrote. He basically just had them ride off into the sunset after getting some gas and staying at a hotel. So this movie plays out quite different than the book, and it had Stephen King's blessing. I got that fact. That's my only fun fact. It's my first fun fact in like 180 episodes, I believe. But I got that fact from Dead Meat James himself. But I thought that was interesting because I did not know that. Like, I had no idea this was a totally different ending that was rewritten for the film. And boy, howdy, does it really hit you right in the freaking balls, man. Whew, tough.
My issue with the ending is, like I mentioned earlier, I've seen Thomas Jane and other stuff. I like him in Deep Blue Sea a lot. He's great in that one, like, for that character. I don't know. He wasn't captivating in this role enough for me. And the ending, while tragic, like even his reaction just was even kind of weird. But, I want to see, a broken reaction. Like, the dad in Train to Busan, like, that's how I want to see.
He has the voice of a narrator to me. Like, I don't know what that, like, I had no other way to describe it. And I have that in my notes. His voice is like someone reading me a book or reading me lines instead of someone that's acting in the film. So that's the way I felt. And again, it's not him. It's his voice. As weird of a critique as that is. But, you know.
Thomas Jane, to me, is forever going to be Mickey Mantle from the movie 61. And so I just kept saying to myself, man, if they were in a sporting goods store, these aliens would be fucked, because if you had a baseball bat, it's over.
Man, look at Nico shake his head. He's seen that one. Yeah, buddy.
Hey,
I don't even know who Mickey Mantle is.
Great movie. Oh, my God. You don't even know
Mickey Mantle. Nah, he's a baseball player. I know.
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's jump into the scene by scene, guys. The film starts with David finishing up a beautiful painting of Clint Eastwood from, I believe it's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Title card as Big Storm rolls in, and they go into the basement. A tree goes through the window, destroying the painting. He goes outside to check out the damage with his wife, and he's thankful they're safe. Billy takes them to show them the destroyed boathouse. David notices it's the neighbor Norton's tree he's been begging to cut down that destroyed the boathouse. They notice a big mist over the lake, and David asks Steph to get Billy dressed while he goes to talk to Norton about some insurance. Norton shows David the tree that crushed his prized car, and David apologizes to him. Norton asks David if he's going into town and if he can catch a ride with him. They pass by a bunch of power trucks and then some military trucks. Norton brings up the Arrowhead Project, asking what they do up there. Norton brings up Miss Edna's gossip of there being a crashed UFO. David notices he has no signal and tries out a payphone. Billy asks to go into the store with Norton, and he's told to hold his hand, which is very weird considering they're not friends, so that was very weird to me. David notices the payphone doesn't work. The grocery store is swamped, and David asks about the generator and if Sally could babysit. Norton thanks David for helping him out as David takes over the shopping list. Billy asks if he and Norton are going to be friends now. David says, I can't go that far yet. Jessup and two other military guys enter the store, and Sally is smitten seeing him. A military police officer arrives as the town folk talk about the damage and the local political frustrations. Emergency vehicles speed by as the military police guy tells him their leave is canceled. An emergency signal blares, and everyone grows concerned. Dan runs to the store with blood on his face, yelling, "There's something in the mist. It took John Lee," ordering them to shut the doors. Dan shouts out our podcast, appreciate that, brother, as a man makes a run for his car, and we hear him scream as the mist covers it. Ambrose believes it's a chemical explosion cloud, as Miss Carmody says it's death. Suddenly, the store begins to shake violently, and lights begin to fall out of the ceiling. All right, Mike, that's the opening set of scenes. What'd you think?
Sure. You confirmed what I started my notes with. And that is, man, is that fucking Clint Eastwood? I don't know shit about Westerns, dude. I don't know anything about Westerns. So I was like, who the fuck? Oh, Clint Eastwood, I think, right? So thanks for confirming that. Hey, let me tell you something. I've had a tree. And, Nico, you live in Florida, too. Maybe you have, too. But I've had a tree come right through my window before. That shit was scary as hell. So that was not a good time. So, man, that was one of the scariest parts of the film to me. I know that, like, post-Big Storm feel all too well. No power. Everything's down. It's like really weird, cold and windy. So I think they did a good job capturing that. Here's the boathouse that looked like ass. Like, it just did. No other way to describe it. The tree, the boathouse, none of that looked good. But okay. I'd be pissed if that happened, though. I will say that. And I mentioned, Thomas Jane and his voice in the opening, so I won't really go over it again. But I like this part here because, as I've said a million times on the show, I like a movie that's in one place. Like, the big bulk of this movie takes place in one store, one location. And so I like that. I like when a movie has the balls to do that, it does, you know, and pulls it off. I think they pull that part off. Shout out to Alexa Davalos, who's in this film, Man in the High Castle, great TV series, one of my favorites. And again, I love this premise. Like, as a story, I love the idea of this mist being locked in the store, and there's people from all different backgrounds and ages and everything else locked in this store together. I think that's a great idea. This has that Purge feel to it. It's almost like a Purge mixed with A Quiet Place. Like, it's got both of those there. Shout out to William Sadler, who plays Jim, one of my favorite characters in Shawshank. My man is singing Hank Williams Sr. in Shawshank. I was like, oh, man, that's a cool little cameo. I won't say little cameo, because he's a big part of the film, and he's a fucking asshole and an idiot also. Last thing, I think this mini quake here works really well. I think everyone does a good job showing fear and terror, and I think, you know, everything falling from the ceiling looks really good too. So I'm invested in the film, but I'm already starting to see a few little problems with dialogue and, you know, kind of how we talk about Halloween Kills. Like, I know we like that movie, but like how Jamie Lee kind of talks like she's reading Shakespeare. Nobody talks like that. And that movie, and this movie also has this problem too.
So I love the tributes to classic films and the art in the opening scenes. I do take exception to the music choice, though. I have never met a single person in my 35 plus years of life who willingly listens to jazz. Fuck out of here. Brutal thunderstorm here. Almost as brutal as the dialogue between David and Steph. Not great. Not great. Also, I'm not sure why Frank Darabont chose to go with the shaky cam look as David was walking out of the house. It's just an odd choice to me. Like, that doesn't return the rest of the movie. So that was weird. Then we see the neighbor, the late, great Andre Brouwer, RIP. I'll take this chance to encourage everyone to watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine and the movie Duets if you haven't seen them. Both yes. star Andre and are Duets. Incredible. Underrated movie, man. No yes. one's ever seen that movie. I like having them pass the military on the way to the store. Great way to subtly show the situation is bleak. Add that to the phones being out, and it's well done. I like the added touch to have the clerk be the babysitter. It shows how tight-knit this community is. And I also like the dynamic between David and Mr. Norton. Great neighborly stuff there. They had an issue, but they're willing to put it to, you know, put it aside them beside themselves to get to the store. And, you know, then Mr. Norton watches after the kid for a minute. That was good. Then Brian wasn't kidding. He mentioned how many people from The Walking Dead are in this movie. Casting auditions for The Walking Dead must have just been a callback session for the cast of this movie. We see Andrea and Morales in the first 10 minutes or so of this movie. Something I didn't like, though, is how old the cop cars and the fire truck were. Come on. No way the local government wouldn't have wasted money on brand new vehicles. That's like their favorite thing to do. But then I did read that those were actual cop cars from the town in Louisiana that they shot in. So that's weird to me. That's the only. So when this movie, I'll go ahead and say a fun fact. When this movie was finished, Stephen King was so convinced that it was actually shot in Maine. He asked Frank Darabont, was this in Maine? Because they did such a good job of making Louisiana look like Maine. But one of the cop cars, when it passes, it says such and such parish on the side of it. And Louisiana obviously is the only state that has parishes instead of counties. So those are real cop cars. Weird. The sirens sounding mixed with Dale from The Walking Dead running out with his bloody nose. That's tense. I like that we waste no time getting to the action here. It is funny to me that I mentioned death from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey on our Blade 2 episode. And then boom, there he is, William Sadler himself. Shout out to him. This is a good overall set of scenes. Honestly, probably the best set of scenes in the movie to me. I'm invested.
All right. I got a nitpick already with this. Not even with this movie, just in general. I can't stand whenever they make a character who has like lines with no name. Woman with kids at home. She deserves a name, by God. But anywho, Ollie checks on everyone as woman with kids at home, says she must leave to get her kids. Our podcast gets a few more shout outs as woman with kids at home asks for someone to help see a lady home. She walks out into the mist broken, hoping they all rot in hell. David comforts his crying son as a store manager asks for them to clean up the broken glass. Ollie checks on Billy as Miss Irene chats with everyone. David goes into the back and turns the generator off. He bumps his head and trips in the dark. Miss Carmody is spreading an end-of-days message as Amanda gets pain meds and drinks. David discovers something trying to break into the roll-up doors. He runs into the store asking if Ollie or the mechanics heard the noise. They say they didn't hear, and they'll all go check it out together. They turn the generator back on and back off, realizing its exhaust is clogged outside. Norm volunteers to go outside and unclog the generator. David calls out the mechanic, saying this isn't an ordinary mist. It's not safe to go out there. Jim is sick of David's bullshit and fires up the generator for Norm to go outside. Myron laughs, there's no boogeyman, until suddenly a giant tentacle grabs Norm and begins to drag him outside. David is the only one helping as the mechanics piss down their leg. Norm has a chunk of flesh ripped out of his leg and chest as Ollie gets an axe, finally, and whiffs. More tentacles enter the building and Ollie and David are forced to let Norm go to save themselves. Ollie restarts the generator to shut the door as Norm is dragged outside and killed. David cuts off a chunk of tentacle stuck in the building. David punches Jim in the face after he gaslights him. You got that kid killed, he yells at him as he's clearly traumatized. He takes a moment to cool down and he has Ollie kill the generator. Jim apologizes about Norm, but David continues to blame them and sends the mechanics back into the store and for them not to say anything. Ollie kills the generator and says, we have to tell them in the market. David doesn't think they'll believe it. Hell, he doesn't even believe it. All right, Mike, that's the next set of scenes. What'd you think?
Brother, you power through that, because I got to tell you, could you imagine me trying to read that over and over again? KKK, and that's even worse. You think about what that really means. We'd still be sitting here if I was trying to read that shit. Anyway, all right. So, look, man, I'm going to say this a lot. I'm going to heap flowers among the character of Ollie for the rest of the fucking show. So just expect it. Happens in every set of scenes. I heap some kind of praise on this man. Ollie here, really nice man. I can already tell. This scene was a tough watch. You know, you mentioned woman with kids. Would have been good to get a name for sure, but I feel awful for her. And I feel awful for everyone else in the store because they do put you in a position like, well, what would you do? I don't know. If I'm the woman, I probably would try to leave to find my kids. But if I'm someone in the store, I don't know what I would do. I don't know if I'd go with her. And I really liked how they played that. I think that was one of the better parts of the movie, for sure. I will say the good thing, and this is the first thought that crossed my mind, I'm trapped in the store. I have unlimited beer, pretty much. I mean, we're gulping these things down, buddy. I can promise. I'd be hammered by, you know, by the time the locusts or the mosquitoes or whatever get there, I'd be done for. I'd be scared to go into this loading dock myself. And I thought about this, like, that's a little too outside for me. You know, the mist can kind of get in there. That's not really a place I'd want to be. And shout out to my man David here, who yelled bitch when he hit something. And I do that in real life. Okay. So like, it was good to see it on screen. I feel like it doesn't happen enough. I'm not gonna lie. Once Miss McCormity or whatever starts blaming people and their sins for everything, I thought of Dustin because that's some shit he would do. But like, hey man, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for your sins, which is just well, God damn it.
You say that and then you take the Lord's name in vain on the very next sentence.
All right, I'm about to show the Lord some of your texts you've sent me. Anyway,
I don't say anything blasphemous.
Okay. All right. Anyway. Chris Owen is really hard to see as anyone but the Shermanator. That's it. He is the Shermanator until the end of time. It's American Pie's great film series. And none of these assholes want to help Norm either. None of them. They all just like, come on, man, you got it. And then they back up like a little bitch. Okay. The only two people that stepped up are the two people that told him not to do this in the first place. And so now this makes a very clear line of who I'm rooting for and who I fucking hate. Very clear right here. And I'm so glad that David punched the shit out of Jim. He fucking earned it. It was a well-timed punch. Good little hook there. I'm sure Floyd Mayweather would be proud. Last thing. He'd probably be proud of the way I'm reading my notes tonight, too. I really like this scene with David and Ollie deciding what to do next. I think it's intense. And I think it does a good job kind of stretching out the story. Go ahead, Dustin.
All right. So we get two shout outs early on in this movie. Don't go out there. Gotta love that. Also, gotta love Carol wanted to leave to be with her daughter, Sophie. We find out how that turns out in season two of The Walking Dead. Spoiler. She must have changed Sophie's name from Wanda, though, or maybe it's a middle name. I don't know. That was weird. Great shot of her disappearing into the mist as she walked off. That was very well done. Show how thick that fog was. And then, man, my God, some old biddy at a tea party. Her nerves are all jangled. Shut the hell up, Granny. This ain't the roaring 20s. Oh, my God. I cringed so hard, I almost sprained my neck. The dialogue in this movie is just, it's not the best. Between that and Norton talking to the group at the front of the store about the plan, just no one talks like that. When David is talking to the other guys about what he heard at the door in the back, we see Chris Owen walk up, like you mentioned, Mike. Most would call him the Shermanator. But real ones know that's Isaac from the classic piece of cinema known as Ready to Rumble, which stars the great David Arquette.
You're correct.
And also, fun fact, Darabont had no idea. He was unfamiliar with Chris Owen's game. He didn't know what the Shermanator was, so he needs to be more cultured and watch American Pie. Annoying as hell that they didn't believe David, though. Like, everyone is spooked about the mist and what's out there, but now all of a sudden they want to have doubt. That's cheesy as hell to me. I hate that whole scene. -4/10. But absolutely love Norm saying pussy before the doors open, because that's very on brand for his character in Ready to Rumble. He was very concerned. Like, his dad says crying's for pussies. Dad says puking's for pussies. And so for him to say pussy, I laughed at that. When Norm gets snatched, it took Ollie way too long to grab the axe. And then when he grabbed it, what the fuck kind of delayed swing was that? So irritating. The CGI on the monster didn't look too bad. I'll give credit there. It wasn't great, but for the time, I think it looked fine. Pretty good. Not sure I agree with the decision to have David be the one who says they won't believe them. I mean, he was the one guy. He was the one the guys didn't believe. And now he has people to back him up, and he's covered in blood. Why the hell would they not believe him? Like, why would he be, oh, they're never going to believe this? That didn't make sense to me. Mixed bag set of scenes, to be honest with you, with more bad than good.
All right, David and Ollie enter the store, and Amanda is shocked seeing the blood on his shirt. He asks her to keep Billy distracted. Jim apologizes again, and they crack open a Bud Heavy. David pulls Norton to the side and tells him what happened. He takes Norton to Ollie and the mechanics, but he's not buying it. He thinks they're trying to make him feel like an idiot. David invites him back to see the tentacle, but he refuses. He snaps, saying it's payback on the lawsuit he filed on him last year. He calls out Joe for talking behind his back and says he's glad the tree crushed his boathouse. He threatens to sue him again for assault. Ollie tells him they have something they need to hear. Store manager is upset Ollie's drinking and asks if he wants to lose his job. He tells him to shut the fuck up and listen to David. David says there's dangerous stuff in the mist. He tells him about Norm being killed by the tentacles. Several call him a liar until they go back there and see it. They poke it with a mop and it twitches until it melts into black ooze. The store manager confirms they may have a problem here. They start piling up charcoal, dog food, and fertilizer against the windows for protection. Miss Carmody is in the bathroom praying, begging for the opportunity to preach and shine a light. She wants to help get them saved. Amanda walks in and Miss Carmody wipes her tears, asking what she wants. She tells her it's okay to be scared and offers her friendship. Miss Carmody, like the good Christian she is, says not to mock her, and if she wanted a friend like her, she'll squat and shit one out. All right, Mike, that's the next set of scenes. What'd you think?
Bro, how everyone here just keeps saying sorry. Like, bro, I cannot stand that. Like, yeah, or Jim in particular. Hey, man, we're real sorry. Yeah, I bet you fucking are, you prick. You got that kid killed, man. Anyway, just throwing that out there. You mentioned it in the last set of scenes, Dustin, so let me kind of piggyback off of that. Why would these guys lie? What point on earth would they lie about these tentacles and stuff for? And using the word tentacles in particular, like, what's the point of making that up? It's a really, it kind of falls flat on his face. And I know it's just a little, like, neighborly beef there because of the lawsuit and stuff that we find out about. It's like, I think that's really all it was a little bit of jealousy or whatever. Envy, greed, whatever. But not good. And, you know, this dumbass at the store is worried about their jobs. Brother, that shit is not going to matter after this. And this, again, Ollie is the fucking OG from back then. Told this man to shut the fuck up. That is my guy. I love Ollie, man. when he sees the tentacle on the ground, he goes, what the hell is that? It's a fucking tentacle, man. What the fuck does it look like? Oh, God. There's just some really bad dialogue to me. I can't help it. I will say, and one thing I think is a good meme at some point, or gif, whatever, is when he says, it appears we may have a problem of some magnitude here. That's a pretty good meme and gif to clip, in my opinion. And then I see Miss Carmody talking to herself, and my only thought was, man, shitting out a whole ass friend would be very painful. So, you know, and for, you know, a woman, for a godly woman, Dustin, that was a pretty crass line. I think you can agree.
I didn't like it.
Thank you.
Oh, you done? Okay. I hate the writing for Norton here. The dialogue is bad. and I hate having him be so adamant in refusing to go back to the loading dock. Also, don't really like the decision to only try and convince Norton to look at it. Ooh, he's a hotshot attorney. We should have him on our side first. That may work had they not established how much this town apparently hates him and hates out-of-towners in general. Like, that was just stupid to me. Shout out to Zapp's Chips on the Shelf, though. Their voodoo chips are the best on the market. Just wanted to plug that. They can sponsor us. I'll take it. I like that they were able to show some people the tentacle, and I actually really like having it dissolve after being touched. That covers for them not trying to take it, you know, pick it up and take it out front to show the people. Good effects on it, too. Thought it looked good. I hate Mrs. Carmody's character so bad. Like, fake Christians are bad enough in real life, but she's just unbearable with her holier than thou attitude. Overall, just another pretty bad set of scenes to me.
All right, Norton is addressing the crowd, saying the evidence is flimsy. Ollie says you just can't convince some people. Miss Carmody goes on another end-of-days rant as Norton invites those who want to talk rationally to join him. Miss Carmody is preaching even more, saying we all prepare to meet our maker. Jim is pissed and threatens to kick her ass. The crowd looks on, somewhat captivated, as she continues to preach about the end of times and the things in the mist. She thinks God wants a blood sacrifice, and Amanda grows tired of her and slaps her. Ollie threatens to wrap tape around her mouth if she doesn't shut up. Billy asks the army guys why their friends won't come rescue them. Billy says the lady scares her and asks if mommy is okay. He promises to do everything he can to get them back to her. Dan asks if anyone has a gun, and Amanda does. She gives it to Ollie, who surprisingly is a marksman. Norton and a few others say they are leaving. David asks if someone will tie a rope around them to see how far they get. The biker asks Mr. Cornell for the shotgun in his truck. Norton can't be convinced to stay and says he's going to send back help. Miss Carmody says they will all die out there. Biker with the rope walks into the mist, and suddenly the line goes slack. Then it's pulled rapidly into the air, burning David's hands. They play tug of war until they drag back a bloody rope and the biker's lower torso. Miss Carmody uses the moment to preach again as the rest are in shock. Sally is jump scared by Jessup, and they begin to chat. She asks why he never asked her out. He says he was stupid, and a lot of us guys are stupid when we're young. The two make out briefly, and he asks for her to stay in the locker room with him. All right, Mike, that's the next set of scenes. What do you think?
Yeah, my man Brent here is a giant fucking douche. You know, shout out to, like you already mentioned, that's a Mr. Andre. RIP to my guy, man. I'd forgotten. Yeah. That was pretty recent, too, man. That's really unfortunate. Look, as nuts as Miss Carmody is, okay, she's nuts. Here in this set of scenes, she's making a few good points that would be hard to deny. And I kind of talk about it later, but I'll just save it, or I'll put it right here because I don't have a lot on this set of scenes. They do a really good job of showing how easy it can be to be in a cult. How easily human beings can be convinced to be in a cult and be led by someone else. Really easy.
Just Texas like that. A&M exists.
Brother, I know. But now we're talking less than 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean,
this has happened really fast where, like, you could tell people in the room are starting to be like, huh, maybe this crazy person is right. Just really crazy. And, again, Amanda should have slapped her harder. That was kind of a – man, that was a little bit of a weak slap there, not going to lie. Amanda, call me sometime, though. That'd be just fine. I did like the line of when he said, you know – you have to forgive, you know, she's unstable. And the guy that's not from there goes, no shit. Yeah, she's unstable. Again, good stuff with David and the son here. Every now and then we need a little reminder that he's in the film because I think their relationship is the heart of the movie, in my opinion, and what kind of makes what makes you have any kind of emotional tie to it. Having the gun is great. Great timing. I won't call it a coincidence. Because, you know, they're in the middle of nowhere, Maine. I'm sure there's guns there. So, you know, great hunting and stuff in Maine. So, anyway. Now, giving the gun to Ollie is fucking great. Ollie becoming some, like, great marksman, you know, better than Lee Harvey Oswald is fucking – that's fun. I enjoyed that line. Or I like that character arc, I should say. Look, if these idiots are going to go out, might as well tie a rope to them. I think that was a smart idea. I just, you know, I just don't see the point of going out. And this is what I'm talking about, these dumb character decisions like, hey, man, you want to be dumb? Go be dumb. But I just think that even in that setting, I'm like, a little too early. You've already seen some crazy shit. Not sure I'd go out to the center of town. So He said, I guess the joke would be on me then. Yeah, motherfucker, the joke is on you. You died. You dead. You gone. Now, one thing I will ask, and maybe they talk about this. Why didn't the tentacled creature break glass and just attack them all? What's preventing? What's the store? What's being locked inside the doors preventing? Because we see here in a little bit, things can break the glass and get into the store. So I think that's a little bit of a big plot hole for me. Maybe they talk about it and I missed it. But to me, I'm like, oh, man, that's kind of a big plot hole. And it's very evident here when they have to go out of the store to get eaten, in my opinion. That's all I had. I thought that was a really big plot hole to me.
Carmody's sermon here was annoying as hell. Just shut up, lady. Woman doesn't know her Bible. She wants to preach about Revelations while quoting Genesis, talking about Abraham sacrificing his son. Listen, lady, do you not know Jesus paid the ultimate sacrifice? Those sacrifices weren't needed anymore. Just unbearable. Hate that lady. Hey, I don't hate her because I can't talk about the Bible and say I hate someone, but hate her character and the way she was written. This set of scenes feels like it's jam-packed with filler to me. Billy talking to the military guys and then him crying about his mom and the gun discussion. All just felt like it went on too long. I did love the Crocodile Dundee moment between the biker guy and Ollie, though. That's not a knife. This is a knife. That was funny. The tug of war was a good scene. I like how they angled it up, the rope, to show the biker had been lifted. And I think the severed body was a good touch. Also like how it was shot to show it being dragged and pulled towards the store. And we could see the people like on the outside or from the outside to the inside. I thought that was a nice touch. Well done. Weirdly placed makeout sesh. Could have done without that altogether. Added absolutely nothing of substance. Like, their relationship didn't amount to a hill of beans. Most Tennessee thing I think I've ever said. It just, like, that could have saved us 3 minutes of the runtime there. I'm honestly ready to wrap this movie up by now, but somehow we still have an hour plus to go.
So, I'm glad you said that because I forgot to put it in my notes. Their relationship adds zero to the film, and they never touch on it again.
No.
Ever. And this movie has, like you said, an hour and some change left, and they never talk about it again. I found that very odd to me.
Yep.
Yeah, they just try to make her death in the next set of scenes like more emotional. That's what they
were trying to do. Yeah.
You didn't need to add another layer to her.
Hey, man, her kill made her face look like Jim Ross in 1997. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
All right. A man is about to eat until a giant mosquito-looking creature flies into the window. David runs up, and they watch several land on the glass. Miss Carmody compares them to locusts in the Bible and is amazed at their stingers. They shine lights at them, and Ollie is horrified seeing a giant flying creature swoop down and feast on one of the bugs. The glass breaks, and the mosquito-like creatures make it inside. Sally is bit by one and begins convulsing. The giant flying creature makes it inside, but Ollie can't get a good shot on it. David lights one of the flying creatures on fire as Sally dies from her bite. A man ignites himself on fire by mistake, and they get him put out, but he's severely burned. Miss Carmody has a mosquito land on her, but it leaves her as she prays. Ollie finally gets a shot on the other flying creature. David grabs Billy in time for Ollie to put the death shot in the creature. The people begin to block the windows, and we see a broken Jessup holding dead Sally's hand. People start to believe Miss Carmody as the biker's lower torso is dragged away. Amanda comforts Billy as David asks if she's had kids. She's very scared, asking if this is going to end. Ollie tells David Joe is getting worse. He's in a lot of pain and asks them to use that gun and to end it for him. Amanda discovers Hattie committed suicide as David asks a group of men if they'll join him on a trek to the pharmacy next door. David is thinking long-term escape from here. Amanda tells him about Hattie and they carry her to the back. David tells him his plan and they're scared. David says Miss Carmody is their Jim Jones. They need to get out ASAP. Dan agrees with David and Andrea tries to convince them people are good. David says the pharmacy will be their test run. Billy cries, not wanting him to leave. He promises to get Billy home, and he gives Amanda the keys to his Land Cruiser, and he asks to protect Billy as best she can. Miss Carmody questions him as he tells the crowd they're going to the pharmacy. Miss Carmody is gaining a following until Irene throws a can of peas at her, shutting her up. Irene volunteers Jim to go, and Jessup says he'll join too. All right, Mike, that's the next set of scenes. What do you think?
Yeah, I just want to say the name Irene being in here, again, any chance I get, I'm going to call Bad Boy Meets World. Maybe Dustin knows what I'm talking about. I'll do it when I'm good and ready. So shut your cake hole, Irene. Great fucking line, Jack Hunter. Anyway, mosquitoes gross me the fuck out, and I'm allergic. So I think if I saw giant, what looks like mosquitoes, locusts, whatever, If I saw them flying towards me, I think I'd pull a Mike Settle. I would. And by that, I mean absolutely shit my pants. I believe that's what would happen. So, yeah, that would not be a good time. I will say some of these 2007 flying bugs or whatever look pretty bad. Like, they don't, the CG or whatever is really tough. Also, and I wrote this, I wanted to keep this in my notes because I forgot. When the bigger one's up, is that a fucking velociraptor? Like, what the fuck is that thing? A pterodactyl. There you go. I'm getting my dinosaurs crossed here. I will say it is a super creepy and very effective scene here, though. With all this stuff flying around, I think it works. This crazy lady quoting the Bible as all this is happening, I think it makes for something that's really effective and really creepy. And I think it works. And they do look, you know, they look not good, but from a distance, it's very terrifying. Also, just kill me a different way. Not giant mosquito bite, bro. Like, just set me on fire, roll me down a hill, trade me in for Coupe de Ville. Anyway, okay? But not getting bit by a fucking giant mosquito. You know, of all the people that could have been saved from one of these stinging, biting her, it had to be this fucking bitch, didn't it? I wanted her to, this whole movie, I'm wanting her to be one of the ones that die. And they just, God, didn't happen here. Of course, that made her even more smug. So, not, you know, of course. Ollie is an excellent shot, though. I mean, for real, like I mentioned last set of scenes, Lee Harvey Oswald type accuracy here, man. Like, he puts bullets through people, no doubt. Now, and again, Sally's face looks a lot like mine after a normal mosquito bite. That's how swollen I get. Okay. I'm allergic, dude. I'm allergic. Not that bad, but I get pretty swollen. Anyway, the most blatant bullshit lie in this whole movie, I know Nico's going to agree, is any pound of meat or roast being $1.99 a pound. Fuck that. That is a bold ass lie. And they know it. I don't care. It was 2007, okay? I know that was a fucking lie. That is too cheap. But if it were $1.99 a pound, I'd go out and buy a ton of roast right now. Guaranteed. And again, I can understand wanting to save someone. But I cannot leave this store just so this man has meds, dude. Call me a big old pussy, whatever you want to call me. But for me, I'm saying a few words and I got to move on. Like we are in a life or death situation and I just... To me, that doesn't add a whole lot to the story, but it gives me characters to root for because, like, hey, good for them. I probably wouldn't participate. And I definitely wouldn't leave my kid there with just those people. Fuck no. Oh, my God. No, thank you. And like I said already, this scene really in particular shows how easy it is for a cult to begin. She's already got followers hanging out there. And last thing, and I've had buddies tell me this. So I know it's a double-edged sword being in the army because you get volunteered for bullshit like this. Like, oh, you're in the army. You're strong and tough. Come help me move this 800-pound truck. Like, same situation here. Just because he's a soldier doesn't mean he wants to go to the fucking pharmacy. But, you know, as it goes.
Yeah, I don't know about the bugs and whatever the hell it was eating them. I feel like one monster in the mist would have been enough. So I'm a little conflicted on that, how many different things come through. But I guess... when we hear later that a portal was open, it makes a little bit more sense. But one thing I do know, absolutely remedial move by Jim to turn on all the lights as David was turning off the ones up front. Joe, could you be on such opposing pages when you see what's going on? Mayhem ensues with Sally getting bitten and then a guy getting himself lit on fire. A little outrageous and unbelievable that that would happen, but whatever. I don't know what David was beating the hell out of a creature like that. Like, why was he doing that? It was clearly not moving anymore. It was like, damn, I felt like the Simpsons. He's dead. Stop it. Tenth scene when Ollie has the Thule pointed at the creature and Billy was behind it. Could have been more dramatic, though. Like, David just slowly and calmly walked over and grabbed Billy and got him out of the way before the thing even moved. That was hugely disappointing to me. Pointless choice to have the old woman off herself. I don't know. That didn't do anything. Like, I didn't care about that. And a dumbass decision for the group, especially David, to say that they have to get out of there. There's enough people there and enough shelving and whatnot to barricade the windows to secure the store to me. I don't think that he would have chosen to leave. Like, logically, He's already seeing what's out there. I know that the windows are getting broken out, but like I said, there's so many fixtures and shelves and stuff. They could have barricaded themselves a little bit, or at least tried to a little bit more. Instead, they used, you know, a couple bags of dog food. And it's like, fuck this, I'm out. I'm not buying it. I don't know.
I think he was more worried about them turning on them with Miss Carmody more than anything else with trying to get out. You know what I'm saying? I think they kind of touch on that. But I mean, I still agree. It's like, why? Like, you can outnumber them probably. You can probably take them. You got a gun, too.
You got a gun. And then, I mean, also, this store is big. There's a whole back room that they, you know, they went into earlier. Just fucking section off.
Yeah.
God, I don't know. I'm just irritated, I think, at this point.
No, I agree. Honestly, if you're going to make a run, they should have had more of those creatures go in there and force them out, if you ask me. All right, anywho, they venture out into the mist and turn the lights off to save the batteries. They make it into the pharmacy, and clumsy-ass Jim makes a loud noise. Irene helps them find the medicine they need until we hear a rustling. Dan tells them to hurry up, and they find bodies and spider webs. Jim is grabbed by the military officer who cries out for help. He says it's our fault, and we see spiders crawling in his skin. The spiders shoot their acid web at them until Bobby gets his leg webbed. MP officer falls over, and his back explodes, and thousands of spiders begin crawling around. Irene uses a makeshift flamethrower and kills a giant spider blocking their exit. Dan kills a giant spider with a sharpened broomstick, and they leave a dead body behind for the spiders to feast on. The survivors make it inside as Jim cries out, they're dead. Miss Carmody is still going at it as David wakes up from passing out. Ollie tells David Joe died from his burns. David sees the following she's gained, and Dan is encouraging David to go through with escaping in the Land Cruiser. David asks a military recruit about the mist. They go and look for Morales and Donaldson. They find their bodies hanging from suicide. Jim drags Jessup out and says it was them who brought the wrath on them with the Arrowhead Project. Miss Carmody chokes him, demanding he tell them what happened. He talks of other worlds, dimensions, to see what's on the other side. Jessup says he thinks the scientists ripped open another dimension, and that's how the mist got into their world. Carmody calls him a Judas. All hell breaks loose as they continue to blame Jessup, and then he stabs several times. Carmody says they feed him to the beast. They carry Jessup out, and we see a giant creature in the mist that pulls him away. Carmody says they are safe for tonight, but we will have to wait and see tomorrow. David tells his son he won't leave him again, and the monsters won't get him. He wakes Billy up as Ollie tells him where the groceries are. The group prepares to sneak out and make a run for it. David looks up and sees Carmody has taken their food. She won't allow them to leave. It's against God's will. She gets her followers riled up and says they mock their God, their lifestyle. She says the blood of human sacrifice must come from them. She wants the boy and Amanda, and all hell breaks loose again until Ollie shoots her twice, killing her. All right, Mike, that's the next set of scenes. What'd you think?
That's some thick-ass mist, man. Like, it's everywhere. That's some thick mist. Anyway, honestly, as much as I didn't want to go, free meds don't sound bad. So if we were ever in like, an apocalypse situation, I may go to the pharmacy pretty early on. I'm trying to stock up because, you know, we're going to be in pain with you know, no electricity and heat and all this other shit. Yeah, man, I might as well be suited up. Know what I mean? Anyway, Jim making fucking noise here. Man, go fuck yourself. You had one job, okay? If I were Ollie, which we see he's very capable of doing here in a little bit, I just would have shot Jim. I mean, fuck him, man. He's added nothing of value to this thing. And I've been waiting on this motherfucker to die, too. Anyway, taking way too long. I will say the effects of this thing coming out of this man's body is kind of gross. I think it mixed. I'll say mixed on these effects. It looks okay. But on the flip side, some of the spidery looking things in this scene look worse than the eight-legged freaks effects. Like, that is not good, because eight-legged freaks had some not so great effects. Fun movie, but not, you know, the effects weren't the strong suit for sure. I like how my phone corrected Drayton to Draymond. So that shows you how much NBA talk I've been having, I guess, at some point while I've had this phone anyway. You know, I'm glad he wants to save everyone, but, like, you know, some of these people are just pretty hopeless, man. And after we get back from the pharmacy, and maybe Dustin critiqued it, I don't know, but I would have taken a nap just like this man. That adrenaline crash nap hits hard, son. Like, it's all coming out. I got to go to sleep for a little bit. A little nap never hurt anybody. And then we get Mrs. Carmody. What happened?
Snaps. Be a man.
Be a man. Here we go with this Charles Manson spewing motherfucker, man. She got to go. And I just wrote in all caps, shut the fuck up. She is, man, I hate when people take something good like the Bible and turn it into the most just twisted way of putting stuff. Like, just, I hate it. You already touched on that, Destin. And look, this scene right here with the soldier whose name is slipping me, I apologize. Really well acted by Sam Witwer. If I'm not mistaken, is the name of the actor. He's in a few other things too. Super believable. Feel really bad for him, you know, because it's like an army of people are now pulling against him, you know, with their pitchforks. Literally, they stab this motherfucker. And I had forgotten they go full psycho on his ass, you know, and start blaming him and throw him out into the mist. Like, that was some crazy shit. Here's the thing. It's technically David's fault because he was the one going around like, where are your friends? Where are your little friends? Where are your buddies? Like, ah, man, if you had not said that, no one would have known that, you know, he may have known a little something. That's a little fucked up. Probably should have just left that guy alone. He was pretty innocent. Man, they missed a chance to get a really cool shot, though. Here, when they're pulling him off the glass, he has that bloody handprint. They just, like, cut away from it pretty quick. I would have lingered on that. Let that kill really sink in and linger on that bloody handprint. It would have been a cool shot, but they didn't do it. So what do I don't get paid to make movies. They do. So what do I know? Again, like when they go back to Billy and David, because again, we need some humanity, some levity, some heart in the film right here. And then I'll shut up. This is the best scene in the film to me. The back and forth between the two groups that have now come out of this store really is really, really good to me. The best part of the movie, hands down. And I just think it's really well done. It's probably the best acting in the film from all across the board. And shout out to my man, Ollie, who's quick draw McGraw, man. Finally puts a cap in that ass and blows her fucking head off. Well, not really, but hey, man, cool shot, cool visuals. That death felt so satisfying to me. Like, that is one on-screen character that just had to go. It was very, it felt good in my soul. I can't say it any other way.
Nah, Mike, the best part of the movie does happen in this set of scenes, but it's not what you said. It's when the old lady threw the can of peas and hit Carmody in the head. That shit was hilarious to me.
Fucking hilarious.
But then again, the bar is set pretty low as far as the best part of the movie. Stupid jump scare when Jim walks into the shelf in the store. Like, they pretty much all have flashlights. No reason he would have done that, logically. Disgusting when the bugs start crawling out of the man that's tied up or strung up. But I don't know why they just stood there watching. Run, move your asses. Like, they just froze. I hated that. When the acid web rips Bobby's flesh off his leg, that was well done. As was the guy's back bursting open and all the bugs crawling out. I get what you're saying. The spiders didn't really look that good, but it was cool optic. But again, they just stood there. Fucking move, people. When the group gets back to the grocery store, we get a very young and the restless ass scene transition. As David stares off in the distance while holding Billy and it fades to black. That was terrible. And again, that's one of those moments I was talking about. Like, you could tell that's commercial break. Head and shoulders. Like, what the fuck are we doing here? And then, oh my God, he said he was sorry. Wasn't that the word he used? Sorry? My God, that's horrible dialogue. Like, it was a hard word to remember. He said 5 words total. Wasn't that the word he said? Sorry? Fuck off. The crowd blaming Jessup is stupid to me. Like, he's a private in the military. You think he ripped open a portal to another dimension? Fuck out of here, lady. Like, he's a private. It's not his call. Anyway. Then he just moved around outside like he hadn't just been stabbed a handful of times. Not really buying that. Like, he was acting like he wasn't hurt at all. Maybe his adrenaline was, you know, pumping. Maybe that's the excuse. I don't know. Miss Carmody gets mad at the group for stealing food. Then takes a swig of milk that I guarantee she didn't pay for. Okay. I hate this bitch. And then we want the boy. Fuck off, man. God, I don't remember this movie being this terrible. Thankfully, Ollie ended my suffering of having to tolerate Carmody anymore. But I could have swore he was out of bullets earlier. Maybe the gun just jammed. Maybe he just didn't have any more on him at the time. But the gun clicked earlier, right? Like, he pulled the trigger. Nothing happened when they were in the drugstore. I don't know. Either way, thank God we're setting up for the ending.
Yep, here's the ending. David has them move the ice machine, and they make a run for the Land Cruiser. Ollie gets the doors open, but is grabbed by one of the giant creatures and killed. A spider pounces Myron and kills him too. Irene, Dan, Billy, Amanda, and David make it into the car, but Ambrose is killed by spiders. David grabs a gun on the hood right as the spider charges them, cracking their windshield. It spares them and leaves them alone. They drive away as an extremely ominous score plays, and the rest in the market watch them drive away. David goes to his home and sees his wife dead in a spider web. He begins to weep and says, "Let's see how far this field gets us," as he gains composure. The vehicle stops when we see a huge creature walking amongst them. He continues driving until they inevitably run out of gas. Dan and Irene are proud they gave it a good shot, and we hear creatures approaching. David turns around and looks at the others and then pulls the gun out. Dan nods in approval. David says they have four bullets and loads the gun. Amanda begins to cry, and Billy awakes as a creature roars. We see four bullet shots go off in the car. David screams and cries out for God. He tries to shoot himself and exits the car for the creatures to kill him. He yells for them to come on, shaking the vehicle out of anger. Suddenly, a military tank pulls up, and he sees people have been rescued, including the woman with kids from the store earlier. David falls to his knees and cries and screams in agony for what he just did. More tankers continue to pass as the film ends. All right, Mike, what'd you think of the ending?
So I know I said earlier in the film they don't need to go out there. But at some point, you do got to quit sitting around. You got to go try to see what's up, or you're going to die in the store the same way. Although there was a lot of food in there and other things. Probably could have lived quite a while. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Not Ollie, though, man. That is like the one death I didn't want in this whole film. And here we go, man, right off the bat. Shout out to the true fucking OG of this film. A total badass and doesn't look like one, so good for him. I think the scene, the whole scene in the car is really well done. It's effective. There's the scary spider monster thing. I think that part is really good. Although I will tell you from experience, driving with a broken windshield is tough. That is a hard thing to do, and you got to do it through the mist. So all the floodlights and stuff in the world not going to save you from being able to see. I don't know how we saw. However, this is just where my brain went. As I'm driving past that store and all those goobers are looking out at me, I'm talking mad shit, son. I'm double birds. I'm talking mad shit to these people who tried to keep us from being out here. And, man, I saw Portland, and I was like, wait. Thought this movie took place in Maine, but then I remember there's a Portland, Maine. So anyway, that's my fault. My geography was tested there for just a minute.
Yeah, I've been there. It's a lovely little city.
Oh, hey, my parents have been there. They enjoyed it as well. Here's something unbelievable. Maybe you guys disagree with me. I don't know. But the giant monster thing not fucking with them at all is a little unbelievable, right? Like, I feel like every other monster has tried to fuck with them, and they just, this one just walks right on past. Like, all right, man. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I guess so. Goddamn, this is hard to watch. This whole ending here is really hard to watch. And I just don't think I could do what David did. I really don't, especially with my son. Like, I just – that would just rip me to shreds. I'd shoot myself first. Anyway, but really hard to watch. Just heartbreaking, gut-wrenching stuff. And, you know, it just kind of makes more sense to have everyone shoot themselves, you know, whoever, you know, and load it with empty. So you're kind of playing Russian roulette. Like, hey, some of you may live, some of you may die. I don't know. Like, I feel like that would have been a better way. But anyway.
You're going to have a six-year-old kid play Russian roulette?
Well, not him. I would have let the kid live. He would have been fine, I guess. Let the kid and Amanda live, or the kid and the dad. You know, somebody's got – the kid didn't need to die, okay? That's all I'm saying. And the first time I saw this movie, I was so mad at this ending that it really fucked. I never wanted to watch this movie again, ever. And especially the woman who left, she's on this fucking tank with her kids. She had it right the whole time, man. She, woman with kids, yeah, she's with kids, all right, on this fucking tank, riding out of town, riding out of the wrist. So again, a bleak goddamn ending. Fuck this ending, man. Like, it doesn't negatively affect my score like it would have back in the day, but I definitely don't like it. Oh, God, it's hard.
These dumb fucks are already risking it by being outside in the first place, and then they're just going to start yelling for Bud and Myron. God, I hate every character in this movie. There's not a single character that I like. Then the dumbest shit of the movie to me, why did David reach between the door and the frame of the vehicle, reaching for the gun, when he could have just grabbed the gun so much quicker if he went around the door, like close the door, grab it, get back in. Like, it was just drama for the sake of drama at the expense of logic to me. I don't know. And then I think it was supposed to be shocking, but finding out David's wife is dead was expected. Didn't do anything for me there. Of course she's dead. Then the ending. What the fuck, man? A nonverbal suicide pact between all the adults. And, you know, there were other options they didn't even consider. All the parked cars they passed, they didn't try to commandeer any of them. They just went for the shock value of having David kill his son like that. Fuck out of here. Now, I will say, I will give credit in the little boy, you know, when he woke up, the look of terror in his eyes as before his daddy capped him. That was good acting by the little kid. And then another thing, though, I think logically, one of the other adults would have been like, no, I'll live so that you don't have to potentially live with the thought that you just murdered your son. I, you know, maybe one of the old people in the back. Maybe Andrea, what's her name, in the front seat?
Amanda, yeah.
Amanda? Yeah, it seems more logical that Amanda would have been like, you know, if you're going to shoot your son, you shoot yourself too, because that'd be in the off chance that you survived this. Like, I don't know. It just didn't make sense to me. But then help rolls up on a tank, and I laugh my ass off. 2 minutes ago, he wanted to save his son from a painful death and give him a quick and easy one. And now he has to live with the fact he killed his only son. Fuck this ending, and honestly, fuck this movie, with all due respect to Christina.
Hey, fair enough. We pride ourselves on being honest on here. With all due respect, of course. Let's shout out our social media comments and questions now. We'll do it on Instagram first. Jordan Zeger commented, I love this movie. Oh, Lord, and you're going to hate our review. And I'm so excited to hear what you guys' thoughts. I have the worst fear of bugs or anything of the sort, so I think someone would definitely have to take me out if this happened, with a skull emoji. Which creature monster from the movie freaked you guys out the most? This is easy for me. The spider, the acid spiders. I do not like spiders in the first place. And you got them shooting acid too? Yeah, I'm good on that. Mike, what about you?
I think I've made mine clear. The flying bugs is, they look way too much like a hornet, mosquito, and that's, nope, allergic to all that shit.
Hey, I don't like them either.
I ain't afraid of shit. No,
I was like,
If they had a rat shape one, I wouldn't fuck with it. But,
could you imagine? Oh,
you know, the ones that could fly, probably the ones that could fly, those bug ones, because after seeing what it did to her when it bit her in the neck or whatever, wherever it bit her, that one's, you know, something could fly. I feel like I could outrun something, but flying is a little different.
Hey, good point. Optional 13th Ghost, one of the best Instagram handles I've ever seen. I haven't seen this film in some time, but I remember it being a pretty solid adaptation of the novel. That ending, though, absolutely destroyed me, and it's one of those sequences that still sticks with me. I'll admit that if I didn't know the ending and watched this for the first time, it probably would have fucked me a lot more, too. But like I said, I already had it spoiled, unfortunately, so I hate that, honestly. I really do. All right, let's jump over to Facebook now. Michelle Mers, a big fan of the show, commented that new meme going around, how impatient am I, this impatient with the final scene. That's brutal. Right. I'll read Christina's comment last. Matt Sears, that ending, wowzers. Sharon replied, one of the most messed up endings to a movie for sure. And then Michelle replied, like my soul got ripped out and stomped on. It was brutal. Like, I don't know how the dad would live with himself, honestly.
Awful.
Anita Russell commented, someone needs to take out the religious woman. She was crazy. The ending, though, heartbreaking, for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, here's Christina Tower, the blood donor. We appreciate your donation. Hey, yes, guys, thank you for doing this review. I don't know if you're going to say that after you listen to it, but I hope you still love us. I found this movie to be interesting because you had these otherworldly monsters as a threat from the outside, but I felt the real monsters and threat was coming from in the store.
Yes.
Darabont has a real talent from writing such complex characters. Also, I'm not sure if you felt the same way being such a fan of the show, but all I could think about while watching Midnight Mass was that Bev Keen was inspired by Miss Carmody from this movie. Absolutely. I haven't seen Midnight Mass yet.
Oh, Nico, you should start it this weekend. Seriously.
Yeah. I'm got picking stuff it to do soon weekend, on but, DGOT, the series, so you'll watch it eventually.
Incredible.
And she ended her comment saying, once again, thank you and stay safe with the sunglass emojis. Dustin, we got
thank
anything
you,
on X?
Yeah, there's a few on X. So first of all, we posted the TikTok you made previewing all the movies for the month, and there was one comment on there. Sean the Glee Man said, okay, but I actually love the ending of The Mist. He's a sick fuck. And
you sick bastard.
Michelle Mirza commented to him, said, "It's horribly sad, but so damn good." And then on the actual post promoting the show, got a few. Sean commented again, said, "I actually love this movie, and the ending is amazing. Man chose what he thought was the best option and has to live with it forever. Between that and how much they make you hate the lady in the supermarket, it's a good once-a-year watch for me." I mean, you got a good point about you know, having to live with that forever, and that, you know, he did what he thought was best, and I definitely hated Carmody. That guy at Millhouse 14108 said, "Not a bad movie at all. Some aged CG, but that's to be expected. Complete gut wrench of an ending for sure. 6 out of 10 for me. Love the show, guys." Appreciate that. Randy Smith, Go Dog, said, "Very solid movie. Very well acted. A lot of Walking Dead cast." You were right about that. "It's definitely one of those endings that you go, what the fuck, and never forget. I couldn't imagine having to do this as a father. Stephen King came out and said that Darabont's ending was better than his." Yeah, you're correct about that. And then Hernandez Gunn said, "That ending." That sums it up right there.
Yep. Dustin, you got any fun facts you want to share?
Yeah, I got a few here. Let me get them pulled up. So Stephen King said that he was genuinely frightened by this adaptation of his novella. Frank Darabont described that as the happiest moment of his career. I mean, that's a pretty good honor. During an action scene in the film, a man runs into a wire rotating bookshelf in the grocery store. And if you look carefully, you can clearly see that all the books on the shelf are written by Stephen King. That's a cool little nod. This is the third film that Frank Darabont has adapted from Stephen King's work. The other two are The Shawshank Redemption and The Green Mile, both significantly better than this one.
Oh, man. I mean, they are.
No,
they're both great.
Even if you like this movie, you objectively have to say those two are better, because those are two fantastic movies.
Shawshank is one of the best films of all time. Yeah. So, yes.
And so, you know, take my hands, boss. You know?
It's a great film.
Green Mile. Hey, Nico, have you seen The Green Mile?
Brooks was here.
Have you seen The Green Mile?
I have, but it's been a long time. I just bought the Shawshank Redemption on Blu-ray, and it has The Green Mile. I'm going to rewatch The Green Mile pretty soon.
Hey, nice, I got that same combo. Nice.
Well, in the pharmacy scene.
It was $9.99 when I bought it.
Excuse me. I have the floor, brother. In the pharmacy scene, when David Drayton is collecting a comic book for his son, Frank Darabont proposed to Thomas Jane that he should grab a copy of The Punisher War Journal, since Jane played The Punisher 3 years earlier. Jane declined, though, because he had a falling out with the producers of The Punisher and decided not to return for the sequel. He instead grabs the issue of Hellboy as a shout out to his friend Ron Perlman, which is funny because we just reviewed Blade 2. Frank Darabont wanted Thomas Jane to play Rick Grimes on The Walking Dead after they worked together on this film. Listen, I like Thomas Jane, but Andrew Lincoln killed it. Like, that is Grimes, so he made the right call. Darabont originally wanted the film shown in black and white. The two-disc DVD Blu-ray release contains his black and white version on the second disc. That's cool. I would actually want to... No, I don't ever want to watch it again. Never mind.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you know, I've said it before. I love monochrome. Frank Darabont also wanted to cast Stephen King in a supporting role, but King turned down his offer. The role eventually went to Brian Libby. And the last one I have is that the characters of David and Amanda were originally supposed to have been already known each other and having an affair, which honestly makes sense because when he first sees her in the grocery store there, he does kind of give her a look like, "Sup, girl," but they never touch on that. And so I think they should have left that in.
It would have made for some
That little look, because
it would have made for some more complex characters for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to show a random makeout session in the stock room, then why not leave that in?
I mean, David's character was pretty boring and had like no charisma, so that would have helped out. I only got two fun facts, then you can go, Mike. I don't know if it's been said or not, and if it has, oh, fucking well. Just kidding. Stephen King got the idea for the source novel when he was in a main market, when he noticed the front window was made of plate glass. He wondered what would happen if giant insects flew into it. That's a interesting thing to draw from that. And I don't know if you read this one or this, but I thought it was interesting. In the opening shot of the film, David is painting in his room. The picture he's drawing is a design from Stephen King's Dark Tower series of the gunslinger Roland, a Clint Eastwood-like character living in a Middle Earth-like world. So that just proves me wrong. I was wrong in the beginning, but fuck me, I guess. Another design in the room is that of the poster of John Carpenter's The Thing. Carpenter also wrote and directed The Fog, which shares obvious themes with The Mist, as well as Christine, an adaptation of a Stephen King novel. And that's all I got.
All right. This movie was made for a cool $18 million and gross at the box office $57.3 million, which is what Dustin makes in a year. So what a bankroll.
We just lying now. I do cheat when I'm the banker in Monopoly.
Hey, I heard what you spent in Tallahassee this weekend. I know what kind of wealth you got.
I made bad financial decisions.
You got fucked over, honestly.
Yeah, that's another story. I did get... Anyway, never mind.
Anywho. Let's jump into our favorite kill, least favorite kill in the rating. Dustin, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and go. So my favorite kill was the MP who burst open full of bugs. Just like you said, Mike, the CG on the spiders wasn't great, but I thought it looked cool and it was a cool idea. Least favorite kill, I went with Jessup because the whole situation annoyed the hell out of me. And then he was stabbed like four times in the gut and he still had the energy to get up and move around and run around like he did. No. But either him or the old lady who killed herself with the pills, because that added nothing as well. So either one of them. As for my rating and final thoughts, look, like I said, I thought this movie was good in hindsight. This is one of those reasons why you should just leave nostalgia alone, not revisit things that you remember fondly sometimes, because this movie aged like a gallon of milk left on the sidewalk in August. I thought it was pretty good, but then again, when it came out, I watched this movie with my ex-girlfriend. I may or may not have been preoccupied on the couch, so maybe I didn't watch the whole movie as intently as I did this time, and I just didn't really like it. It did have its redeeming moments. I gave some credit in that review, so it wasn't 100% bad, but I highly doubt that I'll ever watch it again. So when you factor out the, you know, how few good things I mentioned, couple that with all the bad, I gave it a 2.5.
Whew. God damn. Okay, I'll go next. Lord have mercy.
Holy crap. We're way off.
All right. I'll go next. Favorite kill, I agree. The MP, the officer. I didn't have a problem with the CG. Like, it didn't bother me. I thought the effects were really good. Like, when you had a zoom in, like, on his chest and his skin. I thought the spiders looked good. And then, like, he falls over and his back, you know, explodes from all the spiders crawling out. I thought it was a really interesting kill. Oh, least favorite kill, I wanted to go lazy, like on the kill count, you know, the six guys who walk out and you never see from them again. But I'm going to go with Ollie just because I did like his character and he just kind of got grabbed and pulled away by a creature. I think I've kind of made myself clear with my issues. Another issue I didn't bring up was kind of how hard it is to believe that the woman with children at home survived when everyone else who walked out into the mist died.
No, okay. Man. You know, a mother's strength. You know how a mother, when her baby's in danger, she can flip a car? That's what it was. She fucked these bugs up.
Hey, man. A lot of other mothers died that wanted to save their kids, too, in this situation. But, you know, like, there were some good moments. I think it is a very interesting concept that could benefit, honestly, from a remake. I hate to say it because we're all kind of tired of remakes, reboots. But the concept is there, and if Darabont maybe tried again, it might be even better just because he's made so many good movies and shows in the past. Like, maybe you can look back in hindsight thinking, this was a little too kooky, not serious enough, you know, tweak some things, and it could be a lot better. But my first watch, I'd probably be at like a 3.5, 4, honestly. I did not like it my first watch at all. Second watch, I didn't hate it quite as bad. But I do agree, Dustin, I would probably never watch this again. This is it for me. I gave it a 5.5.
Make me the asshole. Okay. I'll go ahead and read Brian's real quick, and then you can go, Mike. Shout out to Brother Brian. He couldn't make it tonight. He had money moves to make or something like that. But he said, it wasn't bad. A fun little popcorn movie. Now, the ending fucked with me badly and always has. More and less depending on this stage of life I'm at and watch this. It had been so long since I watched it. The end was all I could remember. So honestly, I'm glad Christina had us watch it again. It definitely hits different after watching 11 seasons of The Walking Dead, and almost every member of Frank Darabont's first season rounds out the cast. It's nothing to write home about, but I also wouldn't turn it off if it came on TV or anything. I give it a 5.75.
Okay. My favorite kill is actually Ms. Cormody, because fuck her and her stupid face, okay? That was my favorite kill for all the best reasons. My least favorite kill was a tie, honestly, between Ollie. Shout out to Ollie, one of the best characters in the film, or the best character in the film, and everyone in the car, man. Like, come on. That is not – none of those kills are good. That's a rough thing. So listen, I, you know, like Nico, I kind of made my nitpicks clear, but that doesn't mean I don't like the film, because I do think the story is very interesting. I love that part of it. I love the premise of this movie. And I think, like you mentioned, a remake would maybe go a long way to do it. Maybe take it a little bit more serious, a little more dark. And it was serious. But whether it was the dialogue or something just didn't click all the way. It's good in bits and pieces. But I have quite a few problems with it. And can't say I'll ever turn it on again for any reason unless someone I know wants to watch it. But, yeah, I mean, again, not bad, not good, just somewhere right in the middle. So I give this a 6 flat.
Okay. So that gives us a composite score of a 4.9375. I don't understand these numbers. IMDb is way higher.
I said, we're in the minority for sure.
IMDb has it as 7.1, and Rotten Tomatoes has it as 73%.
Yeah,
that's crazy to me. I don't know. The subject material is there, so I'm
sure
highly against remakes and sequels and all this stuff, but this one could use one, honestly, because subject matter is a cool concept.
Dude, the source material is fantastic. It's an awesome idea. I just had problems with some of the execution.
Yeah, IMDb also likes Cloverfield, so what do they know? Anyway, let's shout out our blood donors. Christina Tower, first off, final girl donor. This was her pick. Really appreciate your donation. I'm sorry we weren't as nice as we could have been to it, but you know, I think one of the things you appreciate about our show is we're honest. Camper Level Reoccurring, Clayton J, Nina, Michelle Mirza, the Horror Movie Crew Podcast, Alex Seligson, and Michael Evans. Camp Counselor Reoccurring, Edwin Hernandez Gunn, Joe Swinford, Shan, Adrian Aiello, Brian Samick, Andrew Ferguson, Matt Strickland, Brooke Maley, Thorne, David Phillips, Heather Superdoc, Jennifer Davis from the Too Close to Home Podcast, if you like true crime, and Dana Tucker, big fan of the show, a new fan of the show as well. Really appreciate it. Go ahead, Mike, then I'll shout out Brian's pick for next week.
Hey, Christina, don't sweat it. I actually picked a movie coming up here in the near future that I fucking hate, so don't feel so bad.
Our next round of picks is just a free month. There's no theme. Brian is going back to, I believe this movie came out my graduation year, 2009. It's got Woody Harrelson in it. You know, we're doing True Detective on DGOT, the series. We're doing Zombieland. I haven't watched this movie in a while, but I do remember really liking it. I'm excited to revisit it.
Absolutely.
Any final thoughts, guys, on the miss before you get out of here?
I think I laid it all out there. Sorry again.
Left it all on the field, brother. Appreciate y'all listening. We'll be back next week with Zombieland. Y'all have a good one. Sorry, Christina.
The mist. There's something in the mist. Oh.
Don't go out there. Just want to remind everybody.
Don't go out there.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.